Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Yud Aleph of the Book of Yechezkel, Chapter 11 of the Book of Yechezkel, and this is going to be the end of a series of this series of Nevuot. So there's been this version of the vision of the Merkava, and then the Radak will point out at the end of the Perek, it'll be sort of the opening of the floodgates, and that Yechezkel will be told, or he'll understand that he's allowed to reveal several of the prophecies that he's had in the past. So everything from when he saw them in Tel Aviv, and what he called Tel Aviv, and then when he went from there into Shamayim, and then he went to the out to the valley, he was taken, and he took the Levena, he took the brick, and he lay on his side in the vision, for the Radak was in the vision, and when he came to Yerushalayim, then he went back to Bavel, all in the vision, all of that now he will start to be able to say. So the conclusion, or the climax, or whatever we would say, about this Nevuah comes in Perek Yud Aleph. So in Pasuk Aleph, the pasuk says, "Vatisauti ruach, vataveuti al shar beit Hashem akadmoni apone kadima." Mine befetach hashar, hasvim vechamisha ish, va'ereh betocham et Yazania ben Azur, vet Platyahu ben Minayahu sareha. So he's taken now in the vision. He's been seeing things in the city and things that were going on in the city, and then he saw the Merkava. Now he's taken out of the Beit HaMikdash, and he is brought to the eastern gate, which faces eastward, and he's looking there at the entrance, and he sees 25 people, among them Yazania ben Azur and Platya ben Minayahu Sareham. So Rashi identifies these people as being the evildoers he saw before, the ones who we saw who were not only bowing down the other direction from the Beit HaMikdash, but they were inappropriately and improperly revealing themselves. And Rashi points out that now, though, we get the names of two of them, and one of them at least will figure prominently in the parak. So we're seeing these people. So in Pasuk Bet, Vayomer Elai ben Adam, Eileha Nashim HaChoshevim Aven Vayotzim Atzad Ra Ba'ir Hazon. So the vision says to him, God says to him in the vision, these people, meaning these are the leaders, as we saw them before, and they think evil and they plot wrong things in this city. Ha'amim, and one of the things they do, Ha'amim lo vikarov binot batim, hi hasira v'anachnu habasar. He said, it's not going to happen. Lo vikarov, not going to happen soon. Binot batim, you can build houses. It is the pot, meaning Yerushalayim, the city is the pot, and we are the meat. So Rashi understands this to mean that this is their way of saying that even if we were to believe in the predictions of the Nevi'im, right, there are Nevi'im coming to them, among them Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, but the Nevi'im coming to them and saying, you are sinning and you're doing the wrong thing and that's a problem and that's usur. So you are doing these wrong things. So their response to that is, even if it were true, so it's going to be a long process. It's like cooking meat. So in parallel to cooking meat, it takes a while to cook meat in a pot. So in parallel to that, here too, they're saying you don't have to worry about it. So much so, you don't have to worry about it. They're saying you can invest in the city. You can build houses. So you build a house usually because you want to live in it for a long time. So you're making long-term investments. It's not just, you don't have to worry, you know, if I told you you're going into exile tomorrow, you'd handle your life differently than if I tell you it's going to be in 3 months. But even 3 months is different than it's going to be 10 years. So another example, you know, somebody gets a diagnosis of, God forbid for them, if somebody gets a diagnosis of cancer, there are cancers that the worry is it'll kill the person in a year. There are cancers which are treatable, but long-term are unfortunately fatal. And then there are cancers which, in many cases, the person will outlive the cancer for other reasons, and the cancer is there, but it's not going to be an actual problem. And what Hashem is sort of portraying these leaders as saying in Pasuk Gimel is that you don't have to worry about anything. Just live your lives. Maybe there's a nevuah here, and maybe it's true, but it doesn't matter. So Pasuk Dalet, Hashem says to him, "Lachin hi naveh alehem hi naveh ben adam." So you have to give a prophecy. So Pasuk Hey, "Vatipol alai ruach Hashem vayomer elai emor koamar Hashem." So now he's been told to prophesize, to tell them something, and now the ruach comes, and it says to him, "Kena martem beit Yisrael." This is what you've said, "Uma'alot ruachachem ani yadatia." And what is happening in your inside of you? Meaning what you're thinking. I know it, and I understand it. And this is what's going to happen. You've killed many people in the city. You have filled the outskirts of the city with corpses. In other words, one of the crimes that Bnei Israel are being accused of repeatedly is murder. So that's a shocking thing. We're not told exactly how they justified it, how they came across it. It may just be that they committed murder. We don't know the percentages either. Meaning, if a murder rate in some city is 1%, and all of a sudden if you have, I don't know, even 1% is a huge percentage. So if it's shocking, if let's say there are one murder per 1,000 people every year, and then in some city it's 10 murders per 1,000 people, so that would be a shocking rise, even though it's still only 1%. So here, it's not clear what Hashem means by umileitem chutoteha chalal, that they're filled. But there is murder happening frequently. Lachain koama Hashem Elokim. So therefore Hashem says, chalalecha meshasamtem bitocha, all of these corpses that you've created in the midst of the city, hei mahabasar vehi hasir, velchem otzi mitocha. Those chalalim are the basar. And then it's the pot. So the Radakon says this to mean that Hashem is sort of turning their mashal around them. They're saying to themselves, Yerushalayim is the pot, and we are the meat, we are the basar, and we are the basar, and it'll take a long time to cook us, but it'll be a long time, but it'll, and so that we don't have to worry about it. So Hashem is saying it's not true. The corpses are the meat, and therefore, since you've killed them, they are going to be the cause of this galut coming much quicker than you think it's going to come. Pasuk. The only thing you've been afraid of is the sword, is the enemies, is people coming to fight you, and I'm gonna do that. So that's gonna happen to you. The thing you fear is gonna happen. You knew Hashem Elokim. I'm going to remove you from the city, and I'm going to give you in the hands of foreigners or strangers, people you don't know, that and I'm going to judge you in that way. Bacherev tipolu, you're going to fall by the sword. Al gvul Yisrael eshbot etchem, on the borders of Yisrael, I will judge you and punish you. Vidatem ki ani Hashem, and then you'll finally get the message. You'll finally get the understanding that I am Hashem, meaning not just that I am Hashem, but I am the one who's controlling your destiny and causing you problems. Rashi points out that this reference to Gvul Yisrael is that there, our tradition is, is that there Tzidkiyahu was judged by Nebuchadnezzar, and that's where Nebuchadnezzar kills Tzidkiyahu's sons, and that's the end of the Gvul mentioned, because it happened Adlavo Chamat and Chamat, and it happened there. That was the end of the Gvul mentioned by, in the case of Meraglim. So in Pasuk Yud, Hashem saying, your feelings, your assumptions, your casualness about life is going to be turned against you. He lo tia lachem lasir v'atem tiyu b'tocha lebasar agvul Yisrael eshbotutchem. And that's not going to happen for you, and you're going to be the meat, that you're going to have this long cooking process and period that you don't have to worry about. It's not going to happen that way. Because I'm going to get to the borders and I'm going to judge you. V'datem kini Hashem, and then you'll know, or you're supposed to know. I think the Jews' powers of not recognizing what's happening to them are very strong, but Hashem is saying the point of all this will be that you'll understand vidatem ki ani Hashem Hashem chukai lo halachtem, that you didn't follow in my ways umishpatai lo asitem, and you didn't follow my laws uchmishpatei goyim asher sevivotechem asitem, and you followed the ways of the nations around you. Radak, on following the ways of the nations around you, says to both to worship idols and also to kill innocent blood, to kill innocent people, like they do. So that's an interesting thing, that the assumption that people, that the commission of murder can be an adoption of the ways of the non-Jews. So you can have all sorts of things about how, it comes back to the question of how did they allow themselves to commit murder. There are more violent cultures, less violent cultures. In the more violent cultures, they assume that they are doing the right thing when they commit murder. They think they're justified, right? So if there is a society in which if you disrespect somebody, if you treat them with a lack of respect, they feel justified in shooting you to demonstrate that you owe them respect, and then their family feels, and the family of the victim feels justified in taking revenge and all that. That's a very violent culture in which each of the pieces of the violence feels okay and appropriate. So that would be a way, if you adopted that version of life and that vision of life, you would come to see it as well as an appropriate kind of thing. So Hashem is saying, and that is an adoption of their mores and their values in an appropriate way. I point out that in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lamed Tenu Amud Bet, Then we're contrast two psukim in Yecheskel, one of which in Pasuk Hey, which we've already seen, you didn't even do what the Jews around you do, what the people around you do, the non-Jews. And here in our Pasuk, the Pasuk says, and you follow the ways of the non-Jews around you. So the Gemara doesn't understand. It's a contradiction. The Gemara says, you didn't follow their good ways. Kimitukanim shebahem lo'asitem. You didn't follow the ones who were best among them. But like the bad ones, you did do. So that's the problem. That it's, Hashem is not using the non-Jews as an example necessarily of evil, and not an example necessarily of good. There are non-Jews who act in appropriate, righteous, upright ways, at least in certain ways, and there are non-Jews who act in inappropriate ways. It could be even the same non-Jews in different contexts. But the vision that Yechezkel is assuming, at least according to the Gemara Sanhedrin, is that the ideal would be to understand what that of which they do, which is good, and follow that and emulate that, and that of which they do is not good, and reject that. So it's an interesting point, because I once asked, actually, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, if we were talking about in the Middle Ages, there's a whole discussion about Sefer Hasidim adopting the modes of worship of the Christians around them in some ways. That's a whole discussion within history. But I said, as knowing these Jews, how could they have done such a thing? So he suggested, and I don't know that he meant to publish it, so I don't know that he would stand by this, but he suggested that there are occasions when you see something and it's so obviously good, it is so obviously appropriate, you can't imagine that it doesn't exist in Judaism as well. The similar thing might be true of Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam, of the Rambam's son, who is understood to have adopted some Sufi modes of worship. So there too, it would be you see something and it's so obviously appropriate, it has to be the Torah includes such a thing. So how that happens, it's a complicated question. But this Gemara sort of fuels that same idea. There's the assumption that kimitu kanim shebahem, the good ones among them, you should emulate, and the bad ones among them, you don't emulate. So this is what Hashem is blaming them for. So now in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayihi Chihi Navi, and it was as I was prophesying, Uflat Yahu Ben Benaya Mate. And suddenly, in the course of the vision, Flat Yahu Ben Benaya dies. So Yechezkel, so the Pasuk says, V'apol al panai, falls on its face, V'as'ak kol kalon, I cry in a great, terrible voice, V'amor, Aha, Hashem Elokim, Kalato, Seth, Shevi, Israel, are you really going to completely destroy the Jewish people? So the Rodak is bothered, he doesn't understand the sadness. Why is he screaming and crying over this death? After all, he's a Rasha, he's one of the people he sees in the vision, who are leading the people astray, who are bowing in the wrong way, who are acting inappropriately towards the Beit HaMikdash. So what's the big deal? So the Radak suggests that it was the suddenness of the death when he was a leader, and that Yechezkel had hoped and thought that there would be time left for him to do tshuva and for the people to do tshuva. And seeing this reversal or this suddenness of the death, so that leaves a... That's a problem for Yechezkel. I would also point out the Gemara in Kiddushin, defined better with Bet, the Radak doesn't mention this, but there is a debate between Rav and Shmuel as to whether this death was appropriate or not. Meaning, there's some question. There was a tradition that Yahu ben Benayahu, at some point in the context of the Galut, speaks to Nebuchadnezzar in a way that's good for the Jewish people, and that was what bothered Yechezkel about his having died. The other possibility that the Gemara raises is that Yechezkel is upset because he shouldn't have died in the way that he did, and that he died too comfortably, that he dies suddenly, so the Radak is fasting on the suddenness, but the other opinion of the Gemara over there is that Yechezkel was bothered by the fact that he died comfortably, that he died without a problem, and that he died peacefully, even though he's such an evil person. So in some way, Yechezkel's bothered by the death. The Radak, I think, accurately points out that Hashem never really responds to that question. So whatever way you have of understanding the death, and Yechezkel complained about the death, it doesn't get responded to, although it is included in Navi. So it's either this was an appropriate complaint but it didn't deserve an answer, or we're supposed to recognize that it wasn't such an appropriate complaint, or we're just supposed to understand that Yechezkel, as he's having these visions, is not unmoved by the plight of the Jewish people. So Hashem comes to him and he says to him, Achecha, Achecha, So Rashi and Radak both understand, I think it's Rashi and Radak, certainly it's Rashi and Radak, understand this as a reference to the other exiles, to the Galut of Shomron, of Yechaniah, of all those who have gone into the exile, right? Anshei Geulatech, who have gone into exile with you. Right? And Radak suggests that the reason why they're being referenced here is because they were among the leaders of those that you built houses and they've already gone into Galud. Hashem Amru Lahem, Yoshevei Yerushalayim, the people of Yerushalayim said to them, don't worry about Hashem, this city is given to us to be a Morasha. So you have to understand who you live among, I think is what Hashem is saying to them. Now I will say that the JPS translation puts in brackets the I will save your brothers. So he thinks, Hashem is saying, I'll save them. But it seems to me that the way Rashi and Radak are understanding, it's not a question of Hashem saying he'll save them. Hashem is saying you have to understand the situation. In other words, it might be sort of a response. If you didn't understand it the way Radak did, it could be sort of a response. The response being, you're complaining about the death, but you have to understand you're living among people who have gone into Galut, and they've gone into Galut because they were led astray by the people of Yerushalayim. So I'm telling you that that's why the death that you're complaining about and you're sad about is happening. It's happening because they are the leaders in this wrong situation, and you live out the consequences of what they're doing. So if that's what Hashem is saying, that whole idea of recognizing the consequences, of being upset about the consequences, and factoring that in when you see the punishment that happens to people would be a crucial and important one. And that's what Hashem is saying to him. You're saying, I'm so sad, they should have tshuva, they should this, they should that. And it may be sort of true, but you have to understand what they've done. It's not just that they aren't living a Torah life and are sinning and are committing murder. All of that is a terrible thing. But they're also fostering an attitude which prevents and makes less likely the possibility of tshuva. And I think that's what Hashem is blaming them for here. Pasuk Tedzayin, Lachain, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim. So Hashem said, but. This is sort of, Lachain generally means therefore. The English sort of understands that it doesn't mean that here. It says, say then. It's not really a therefore, it's the other way around. It's but, or however, along with recognizing that Hashem's compassion is not going to happen here. It's not going to prevent the galut from happening. They're not going to have the opportunity to do tshuva like we might have liked. Nonetheless, at the same time, as Hashem is, and the way Radak says it, as Hashem is exiling them, Hashem is also saying that that will not involve a complete abandonment by Hashem. I'm being marchik them, but I will fulfill, Hashem is saying, he'll fulfill the promise that there is in the Torah, where Hashem says, in the Tokacha, Hashem says, v'gam, I don't have the puzzle in front of me, I'm sorry, but Hashem says that even though they exiled far away, I won't forget them. So here too, Hashem is saying that, Ki yichaktim bagoyim, when I've spread them and scattered them, v'ehi lohem l'mikdash me'at ba'aratzot ashebau Hashem. That Hashem is telling us that he will be a mikdash me'at, he will be a small Beit HaMikdash, right? So mikdash me'at is now a term that we commonly use for Batei Knesset. We're supposed to understand when we walk into a Beit HaKnesset in some significant way, in some parallel way, it mimics what we could have gotten out of the Beit HaMikdash, not fully, not totally, in any way whatsoever, by capturing some of that. And that Hashem is saying he will fulfill that role, and then also that eventually we will be returned to Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem will gather us back. Pasuk Yizayin, Lachein Komar Hashem Elokim, V'kibatzi Etchem Min Amim, I will gather you back, V'asafti Etchem Min Haaretzot Asher Nefotzotem Bahaim, and I will take you back from all the lands where you were scattered. I will give you back. Hashem is saying, he will give us back the land of Israel. And then when they return, they will remove all of its, they will remove all of its shikutzim, all of its terrible things that they've done wrong, all of its abominations. They will remove them, and they will sort of cleanse the land of all the terrible things that have been done. Ratati lehem lev echad, and they'll have a renewed heart and a unified heart. Ruach chadash atein v'kir bechem, you'll have a new spirit. Vasiroti lev ha'evenu b'saram, I will remove the stone heart from their flesh. Ratati lehem lev basar, and they'll have a heart of meat, of flesh, meaning, and by that, Hashem means a sensitive heart. A heart ready and able to see all of the necessities of life. Right, it's the difference between being insensitive and sensitive. An insensitive heart is one that sees the world the way it looks like and doesn't think of Hashem, doesn't factor Hashem into it, doesn't pay attention to what Hashem is saying. That's a Lev HaEvan. And that's the Lev HaEvan that will lead one to sin and to ignore Hashem. So Hashem will replace that with a Lev Basar, which is a heart made of flesh and blood, and that will see it. So that we will understand the Jews who get to come back will follow God's laws, and do them and keep them, and once again will return to being Hashem's nation in the fullest sense, and Hashem will be our God. So this obviously, even in our times, has not yet happened, but that is the vision that's being looked for. The scattering and the spreading and all the things that are happening there are not punishment for its own sake. They are a punishment that will have an eventual ending in that they will lead to a return in all ways. So the people who, those whose hearts and whose essences and whose whole persons are taken up with following their shikutsim and their toevot, their terrible things, so their path will lead to their end. Sort of like Platyam and Renayo, the ones who are staunch and firm and stick with their way of doing things. So the examples here are things that we understand are completely out of the range. They're murder and it's avodah zarah. We can't imagine ever doing like that. But Hashem is saying it about whatever path you take that is a non-Hashem path. So now the kruvim lift their wings, and so they lift up, and now the ofanim go with them. We've said this many times. There is an understanding here of something about how the merkava works. And the glory and the honor of God is above them. And so then the glory of God picks up from the midst of the city. And now it removes itself to a mountain to the east of the city. And this is, again, in that Mishnah, in that bright and Avodah Rabbeinu Natan, is another example of a movement of Hashem, of this slow process, this 10-step process of Hashem leaving the Kodesh HaKodeshim where the Shekhinah was supposed to be resting. That whole perspective is reminding us that it's not like we lost Hashem right away. Hashem just got angry, as it were, even in the metaphor, that Hashem was angry like a parent who just blows up and leaves. There were 10 steps to it, and the 10 steps, this is one of them, again, showing the slow leaving of Hashem because of the things that we've done. So now a spirit takes me back to the Gola, to the land of Kazdim, to Chaldea. And here it's clearly on Mar'eh. So now he's left back where he was, and he's left back where he was with the vision having left him. So in Pasuk Aleph, so now in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Yechezkel opens his mouth, and this has been a long process, meaning if the Radak, a lot of this was done in a vision, but for Rashi, a lot of this was done in real time, and so it's been a year and a half, he's been having vision after vision after vision, but hasn't thought he was allowed to say it. So now, as the Radak points out, now that the visions have completed, or some unit of them have completed, his mouth is opened, and he's allowed to speak to the people in the Gola all the things that he was told. We're not told how the Gola reacts, but now Yechezkel's mouth is open, he starts spreading his understanding and his words. So this is the end of that unit, to some extent, Yechezkel's long introduction to Nevuah, introduction to the prediction of the fate of the Jewish people. There will be more of that, but at least some milestone has been reached in the life of Yechezkel, and that he is now already announcing to the public what it is that he's hearing from Hashem. Have a great day.